Hi, everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering. And it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I'm delighted to have another amazing woman with us to share her story. So I'd like to say hello to Gouda. Hey, Gouda, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good, thank you.
To get us started, would you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and where you're from and where you are presently and what you do with yourself?
Okay, well, my name is Gutta. My real name is Guðbjörg, but I use Gutta especially internationally. And the strange name, it comes from Iceland. So I am Icelandic. And at the moment, I am situated in Wrocław in Poland, where I'm working with a theatre company that I'm a part of. Because what I do or my profession is acting. I'm an actress.
Wow. How did you get involved with that? Have you always wanted to be an actress?
No, not at all, actually. When I was younger, maybe when I was a kid, I really liked going to the theater, and my dad was an actor and a director, so I used to go a lot. And probably when I was around 12, I really wanted to do it, but then I didn't think about it anymore. So it's only kind of in my later, in the later stages of my life that I've got involved with the theater because, well, I think when I was at high school or kind of a high school college, we had a very strong theater group there, and most of my friends were involved in the theater company or the theater group, but I never went, and I told myself that I didn't want to do it. But actually, I think it was because of the fact that I had a stutter that I didn't dare.
So what kind of changed your mind? What kind of got yourself to be willing to take the risk?
Well, for me, what kind of did the trick was when I was about 21 or 22, I got involved with the Icelandic Stuttering Association, and through them I went to a youth meeting, a European youth meeting for people who stutter. Well, obviously young people who stutter, and this was in 2003. I went for the first time, I think, and just by kind of starting to participate in the stuttering community, it really kind of helped me to build my self-esteem and to just see the possibilities, maybe.
Well, when you say start to participate in the stuttering community, what types of things did you do at that first conference that you attended? Was there a lot of opportunities for socialization and talking and those types of things?
Yeah, that's the main aim of them, really, I think. And well, these youth meetings, they are organized by the European League of Stuttering Associations, and they're held every other year. And it's about getting around 30 young people from different countries of Europe together in one place for a whole week. So you spend 7 days with 30 people in a place that's not in a big city, but quite kind of secluded. So you get to know people really well. And their aim, the European League's aim with this is also to get young people more involved in their national stuttering associations. So it's so you do a lot of kind of workshops that are both aimed at giving you new experiences or boosting your self-esteem, and we also do things to that's relevant that might be helpful to work or volunteer for your national stuttering association.
And you said you were 21 at the time that you attend it for the first time. So
yeah.
Were you in college at that time?
I was working at the time. And so I participated two times, and then the last time that I went, which was 2 years ago, I went there as a workshop leader. So I gave a theater workshop. We did a bit of, yeah.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah.
So you kind of became the student and then the teacher, actually.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
What type of workshop did you lead on theater? That just sounds fascinating.
Yeah, well, that's what I kind of, that's why I like theater, I guess, as well, because I like it not only professionally, but to work in a theater, but actually to bring it to the people somehow. What I did at that youth meeting was kind of just doing. Exercises that allowed people maybe to just get to know different ways of communicating, and we played a lot of kind of theater games, and theater games they have a lot to do with working together, cooperation and all that kind of thing, and just getting people a bit out of their kind of normal behavior and so different kind of physical exercises, voice exercises, and then a bit of improvisation as well, but really with a sense of playing and having fun and just getting a bit out of that shell and allowing yourself to be a bit silly and playful,
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds wonderful. And of course, the people that attended your workshop were young people from different countries who stutter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what was their reaction? I mean, how did they receive that? Did they enjoy the workshop?
Yeah, well, I think most people did, yeah. And because it is hopefully, yeah. But because it is, quite a safe environment to let yourself go a bit, and of course you have to be careful not to put too much pressure on people. It's different how far or how willing people are, but I think in this kind of environment people feel quite safe to participate, and so we did a little the last day we had put together. I think we split the group into four little groups, and so every group did a little show or a little sketch, something to do with stuttering or their experience, someone's experience of stuttering, so a situation or something, So we kind of worked with, stuttering as a theme as well.
Mm-hmm. That is just so great. How did that feel for you to be the one facilitating that, to like see something that you were able to create and give back a little to young people who may have just been experiencing that for the first time?
Really, really, really great, actually. I had some amazing feedback. I mean, there was there was one of the guys who came to me afterwards and said, like, thanks, you've changed my vision on my stuttering. And I was like, whoa, whoa. that's obviously the best thing that you can that you can get, is to know that you're actually able to help someone, you know, and that's what's most important, I think. So I like, and that's partly why I started with all this theater, you know. I did an acting course and all that, is because I would like to use it more as a thing, you know, to help people, I guess. Because it brings quite a lot of joy and playfulness, and just expanding yourself in some way. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily only for people who stutter, of course, you know, but
mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the European League of Stuttering Associations is what brings these youth conferences together every other year. Now, I know Anita Bloom from Sweden has been very instrumental in organizing these. Have you ever met Anita?
Oh, yes. yeah, we call each other sisters. She's she's probably one of the persons who has influenced my life the most, really. And I have, where I am today and how comfortable I am with myself or with my stuttering has got loads to do with just her and our talks and the things that she does.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how is that? I mean, how did she influence you? I mean, you met her once, and what, you just clicked, or she really said something that really was powerful for you?
Well, I think what the first thing I remember, because she is one of the main. Organizer for the youth meetings. She's on the ELSA board, and so I came there for the first time, and we all got together, the whole group, the first day, and so she was doing, you know, the presentation, okay, the welcoming, and, you know, what are we going to do for the week and everything, and she stood in front of us, and, you know, giving this speech and this welcome and stuttering. So that was the first impact, the positive impact on me, because I had never heard or seen a person who stuttered do that before.
Oh, wow. You know,
so that's one thing. Mm-hmm. and then I think most of, well, I'm my attitude and how my attitude towards stuttering changed since then is, you know, has got a lot to do with my talks with her, and, you know, how I think she's influenced a lot of us kind of young people, I think, now we're kind of new way of thinking about stuttering, that it isn't necessarily a problem. It doesn't have to disable you. It doesn't have to, you know, be as negative as maybe you would hear all the time before. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that's just such a brilliant thing.
Now, who pays for the young people to be able to come from the different countries to participate in these gatherings?
Money. Right. The European Union, the youth meeting, they get funding from the European Union for these meetings, and as well then It depends on the national associations, but many of them can fund or support financially the delegates from their countries to go as well. So for me and for the people from Iceland, we more or less traveled free.
Oh, wow. What an incredible experience.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, wow. That now, before all of this, growing up as a youngster and before getting involved in the stuttering community, what was life like for you as a young person growing up with a stutter?
Well, I was, quite fortunate because I was never bullied at school or anything like that. So in that respect, I was quite in that aspect, I was very lucky. But I mean, for me, it was, I guess, I was a very, I think I, limited myself much more than I had to because of the stuttering. Like, I thought about it in a very, very limiting way. I would think, I just remember, watching TV, the news reporter, and saying to myself, oh, well, that's a job that I could never do. And then being at school and the teacher would be teaching and, oh, that's a job that I could never do. And then going to a theater and thinking, oh, that's something that I could never do. Ah, but fortunately that changed, because I think a lot of the time we do put too much negative thoughts, limitations that actually maybe you just need to have a go first. You just need to have a try before deciding, no, I can't do this or I can't do that. And it's the same, not only talking, but it's, of course, it's the same with everything in life and for everybody, right? But no, so I think I did suffer quite a bit because of my stuttering, and I was quite a introvert, quite an introvert when I was a kid.
What did your parents think or do? I mean, were they supportive? Did they try to get you some help, some therapy?
I did. My mother did find me therapy at first when I went to school, like at six. There would be some speech pathologist there, but they were not specialized in stuttering, so it was, not really helpful. It was just kind of, teaching me how to read, but I knew how to read, or that was very frustrating because I knew how to read from very early age, but the teachers they didn't realize because I stuttered, so they just thought I couldn't read. That was very frustrating. But no, yeah, my mother was very supportive in trying to find, send me to therapy and wanted me to talk. I had days when I had decided, no, I'm gonna stop talking. I'm not gonna talk. I can't talk, so I'm just gonna be silent for the rest of my life. So my mom would go, no, you can't do that. But my dad was quite, I think for him it was a bit of I think he would feel a bit ashamed. Well, not ashamed, but just embarrassed when people would maybe ask me, ah, well, so what's your name? Or how old are you? People who talk to, his friends or something. And he would answer for me because I think he was embarrassed. But he's quite old school, kind of, it's his. It's his, culture. His that's the stuttering was not acceptable, when he was younger, of course. So so I did feel, I mean, I did feel and know that it was something that was wrong and you shouldn't be like that. which I think today is very important for people who are around children who stutter, is to not give them that sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's what, you know, I think it's so important that, you know, organizations, you know, such as you describe in Europe, you know, associations for young people who stutter. And here in the U.S., we have a couple of organizations as well for young people who stutter. But particularly, we have something here in the U.S. called Our Time, which is a theater company for kids who stutter. And I think it's just so important to give people, young people, an outlet to express themselves successfully where they think perhaps they can't using their voice. So yeah, you're right. You know, giving children a positive message is so important.
Yeah. And to actually, you know, I mean, that name is just great. Our time.
Yes.
This is your time. You can, yeah, you can take your time and you can be and do, you know, who be who you are and do what you do. And you have your own way. I mean, that's something that we have to learn. And everybody has their own way. And we have to remember as well that it's not only... because we have stuttering or we are not fluent, then that's why we you know, can't do this or that, or we have some problems. No, I mean, everybody has their limitations. It just has, so happens to be that disfluency is maybe more visible, or of course not visible, but hearable, audible. audible. But actually, you know, everybody has got their thing. So I think we have to be careful not to feel too sorry for ourselves, and we have to be really strong to teach people how to behave around us. Because what I think is a very maybe a strong thing is that, you know, when, well, you stutter to somebody who doesn't know you and they go, oh, don't be nervous, just relax, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But actually what happens is that I think when you meet someone and you stutter and it's someone who doesn't know you and doesn't know that you're not fluent, it's them that get more nervous than you, obviously, because they don't know what's going on. So I think we have to be really responsible as well to take care of the people that we speak to and to make them feel okay with it, because they might not be used to it or they might not know what's going on.
I like the way you say that we have to take care of the people that we're interacting with. So do you do that every time you encounter somebody that doesn't know you stutter and hears you for the first time? I mean, do you do it every time, or how do you decide when is the right moment?
Yeah, well, I try to be good at it, you know. I try to do it as often as I can, but I'm, you know, mostly, of course, try to explain to people that I know that I will be around more. Like if I start a new job and it's the people that I'm going to work with, or it's a group of people that I'm going to do a workshop with, or, you know, so it's a group of people or a person that I know that I'm going to be in more communication with. If it's just one time, then no, you know.
Right.
But well, sometimes, like if it's, I mean, even if I meet a person only one time, maybe it's a clerk in the shop or something, and, you know, if he reacts in a very strange way, you know, he starts laughing, which is very common, or something, then sometimes I feel, oh, actually, I might have to explain this because the situation is... It's getting a bit strange.
Yeah.
But, so I think because my stuttering is something that people don't recognize as stuttering as well. I have a this kind of blocking way of stuttering, and I move a lot. And especially in the last few years, like I move, I have these really big movements often, and so people think it's something completely different.
What do you mean you move a lot? What part of you moves?
The way that I'm moving now, because I'm developing all the time, it's changing all the time, but the way that I move now is mostly my neck, and so my head will twitch either to the left or to the right.
Okay, and is that while you're stuttering or caught in a block?
That's while I'm stuttering, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's something that really stops my speech, and it's something weird for people because I speak quite fluently. It's very different. Now I'm speaking quite fluently, but still with a bit of stuttering in it. So I think people get a bit surprised because I might be talking to them for 5 minutes without anything. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you know, I start shaking and I, you know, make weird sounds and stuff. So, of course, it's good to explain. And what I also, I mean, maybe that's why I phrase it this way, to help them and to make them understand, to make them feel more comfortable, is that actually sometimes people go and they take your hand or stroke you and like, oh, don't worry, just take your time and I'm listening, and they become very kind of patronizing. And
yes.
And actually just like asking, where is the toilet, you know, and they're like, I'm listening to you, you know, like a psychologist. And actually, no, you know, I think, well, because most of us people who stutter, we've stuttered for the most of our lives. Mm-hmm. So we're quite used to it. But the others, they aren't.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's a very good way. That's a very good way to just deal with that, because, you know, we don't want people being patronizing or condescending with us. But we also want them to understand that, no, we're not having an asthma attack or an epileptic attack, mm-hmm. or I'm not having a seizure, you know, So I do like that we have some responsibility for taking care of those that we interact with. Now, you mentioned that you're in this theater company. You're originally from Iceland, but you're mm-hmm. in Poland right now. How does that come to be? Are you like a traveling theater group?
We are a theater company put together by people, you know, from very different countries. So I think we've got around 10 nationalities. I'm not quite sure because we're always getting more nationalities, something it seems. But yeah. So we are from all these different countries from all over the world, and therefore we can only meet once or twice a year, the whole company, to work together, because then everybody has their own jobs or their own lives, you know, back in their countries. So we do meet, yeah, once or twice a year and for longer periods of time. Like now we're working for 2 months. We got a residency in a very highly regarded theater institution called the Grotowski Institute. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we're working here, and we were working here last year as well for 2 months.
And what exactly are you working on? Are you working for these 2 months to put a production together?
Well, we are. We kind of have our own training, our own kind of theater training, and we use Well, it's both built on physical theatre and we use musicality quite a lot. So what we do is that we're developing this training and we're developing a show alongside it, but it's devised, so we're making it ourselves, right? So we need a lot of time to to develop our things.
I see. And what do you mean by physicality?
So we work. What we've been doing mainly now is that we start working from the body. So working with the instinctive movement, spontaneity, finding contact between people, and then from there we're able to create scenes or relationships or bring the text to that somehow.
Oh, wow. That sounds really cool. So you're working intimately to together with the group of people that you're involved with.
We were quite so we do, so we all kind of we train together using this kind of as a focus, the physicality, and then the music comes in, and now we're kind of more getting to a text based work, and then we kind of create the piece out of that, out of the training.
Oh,
So
that's.
it's quite a deep, quite a intense way of working, which is nice because you don't often get a chance to do that in the theater.
Now, how does your stuttering come into play with your work? When you first meet somebody from another country who gets into the group, how do you deal with that? Do you find yourself explaining it right away, or and does your stuttering
That's
have
such
it?
a okay.
So the last thing that you were saying was that you tell people in the group, and that it's certainly not a secret that you stutter.
Well, I mean, in this work that I do with this company, I never stutter in the work. I mean, of course, outside in our everyday lives, I do, and we live together when we're here, so we get very close. But in the work, I never stutter, and it's like stuttering doesn't exist in that space when we work together, which is quite interesting.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think because I mean, usually I don't stutter on stage, but I have. I remember one of the last shows I did at college was a quite of a difficult process for me, and I think I was well, I did have yeah, I think I did have two moments in that show where I had a slight stutter. Or at least maybe it wasn't that, maybe people didn't really realize because they weren't thinking about it, but I certainly felt it. And I couldn't, speak at exactly the minute or second I wanted to. But so it has happened. And I think in that situation, it happened because I was thinking too much about what I needed to say or worrying too much about what I was doing, really. But in this work and that I'm doing now with this company, and I think in most theatre work, your focus is always on something outside. So firstly, what we do here is that we're very kind of physically connected. And then our focus is completely outside on the space, on the other partners, on the music. So It's nothing to do with kind of worrying about your next line or, oh, where should I stand? Should I be here or there? It's really, you kind of get lost in the work, in the positive sense of that. You're taken by the work, and for it to be able to happen, you have to be taken by it. And therefore, somehow it's just not there. And this is actually something that I'd like to maybe explore further. You know, I'd really like to get a group of people who stutter and maybe, you know, try and find out what is this.
Well, you know, there's been, I don't know if it's actually called research, but there are actors, you know, especially here in the States, James Earl Jones, who played Darth Vader in Star Wars, you know, Bruce Willis, a couple other actors, and then from years back, Marilyn Monroe, there are people who stuttered who have acted, and they don't stutter on stage and when they act, because I guess it has something to do with, you know, you're using a different part of your brain when you're taking on a role. So there is something to it, apparently.
Yeah,
I definitely think that would be worth you exploring further at some point, especially with, you know, the young people that you get the opportunity to come in contact with.
Yeah, exactly. I think it would be worthwhile just to be able to know something more about it, because it's strange as well, because people of course ask me a lot about this. So, oh, okay, so you're an actress, so how come, but you don't stutter on stage, and how come? And I'm like, well, I'm not really sure, you know. And I can never answer this question, but it's something along these lines. But it would be nice to to maybe know something more about how this functions. But yeah, of course, it's different things, and you know, also for some things, it's for some people, it's just changing a cat, playing another character. You know, many people who stutter that I know, if they change their voice, they don't stutter, and all this kind of things. Of course.
Now, what inspires the work that your company begins to work on? I mean, do you go into each session knowing what you're going to work on or what the piece is going to be, or does it just evolve from what you're doing?
Well, we are working actually with Shakespearean text, so we only speak Shakespeare.
Okay.
And we're working with, so each of the actors has a two or three characters from every from a Shakespeare play to work on, and then we try and learn as much text as we can. We are also working with Don Quixote. I'm not sure if you pronounce it that way in English.
Quixote.
Quixote, of Michael Cervantes. So when we start rehearsing, we know we're working with this text, or we're working with this scene, and then, you know, things evolve from there. And the directors, we have two directors at the moment, they sit outside and they watch what we do, and so they get ideas from what we do in the space, and then they can develop their ideas further, and so they bring something new in the next day, and that's how it evolves.
Wow, it sounds fascinating, and I hope one day the world over gets to see some of the work that you folks are doing. It just sounds so unique and so impactful. Now, do you ever talk with your parents these days about what you're doing and how things have changed for you as far as the way you think about your stuttering?
I don't talk that much about stuttering with them. Actually, I do sometimes with my dad at some occasions because I know that he doesn't quite understand it, this kind of positive way of thinking about it. So sometimes, so when the King's Speech was out, I was thinking, well, I should take either my mom or my dad to the cinema, and I chose to take my dad because I thought he needed it. We'd have a discussion afterwards. But
What did he think?
well, he really liked it. And he really thought, I mean, for him, he thought it was amazing how they were able to make the film so interesting without much happening, of course, is but I think he really enjoyed it. Maybe he enjoyed it more than I did.
And what kind of discussion did you have after it?
Well, I guess, because we did meet actually our aunt afterwards in the cinema, and it's a woman that I don't know, I don't know much. Like she's quite far, a relative that's quite far out in the family, and I guess. So we were talking, and she had no idea that I was a stutterer, and so they started to talk, and I think her daughter was there, and so they started to talk about how great it was for people like that to
Like that.
get some to get some help and to be able to speak in public with, and all this stuff. And then I kind of came in and like, well, because, one thing that I didn't like was the fact that which was of course historically accurate, but all the point was that he would be able to do the speech without stuttering, and I think you should be able to do a speech with stuttering.
Absolutely,
But
absolutely, because it's part of who we are.
yeah, exactly. And of course, if you stutter very severely and you're uncomfortable, you can work a bit on a bit more fluency, or you can work on different things. I mean, I think it should be aimed at kind of working to become a good communicator and not necessarily to stop stuttering, because that's not what's stopping you really to communicate. Because at the end of the day, speaking is about communication. So, and fluency or disfluency hasn't got everything to do with that.
You're absolutely right. And what a great way to like wind down this conversation. Because I mean, I just think in just like 1 minute, you just kind of summed up exactly what we've been talking about. At the end
Oh,
of the
great.
day, yeah, at the end of the day, it's communication. And that's what you're doing through your work and through theater and through interacting with young people at ELSA gatherings. It's just communicating. And sometimes for people who stutter, it's a little differently, but that's okay.
Exactly.
That's okay. Gouda, thank you so much for taking the time to share parts of your story with us. It's been delightful and so inspiring. I
Thank you.
appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure to be able to contribute something.
Well, I'm sure you're going to inspire a lot of people who listen to this, especially young people who may fancy being involved in the theater someday, who thought they couldn't, and now, because of you, may believe that they can. So thank you again.
Thank you.
This has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.